The Tolkien Road, Episode 221, The Project Northmoor Controversy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Tolkien Road. John here. Greta.
Hey, hey.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we can't banter a little better than that, we're going to find some shorter intro music.
Well, tell me. So we're like a little less than 2 weeks from Christmas.
Yeah. I'm not telling you what I got you.
I'm not going to ask. I'm just wondering if you're,
I know how you operate.
Are you done with your shopping?
Well, if I tell you that, then that might be too much information.
It's just a yes or no question.
You're a regular Sherlock Holmes when it comes to this kind of information.
You know, so. I don't like to ruin surprises. Contrary to popular belief, I actually enjoy surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, everyone. You heard it first here. Contrary to what you all thought, Greta enjoys surprises.
I guess I should say it depends on the surprise, maybe. In general, I like being surprised with Christmas presents. I do not, however, enjoy being surprised at a birthday party. I do not enjoy surprise birthday parties.
Well, I threw you a surprise birthday party the first year we were married.
I know. And you haven't thrown me one since.
But you seemed to like that one.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I did. But just future reference, please don't do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I won't throw you one either.
Good.
Okay. So we have that recorded.
That's right.
Okay. We can move on.
We sound like regular party animals, don't we everybody? All right. So, yes, Project Northmoor. On this episode, we will be discussing the controversy surrounding Project Northmoor, the nonprofit effort to save J.R.R. Tolkien's home and establish a literary center. Announced at the beginning of December, when we mentioned it on last week's episode, the response to the project had been overwhelmingly positive. However, since then, the Tolkien Society has released a statement taking issue with the project. So in this episode, we'll explore the stated goals of the project and what the Tolkien Society had to say in response to those goals and the project as it was announced. I know that we also last week had said we were going to be kind of doing a split episode between the follow-up to our Lord of the Rings and Religion episode with all of the correspondence we've had and then this topic, but between then and now, the Project Northmoor thing became a lot more interesting. Like, it was already pretty interesting, but it became even more interesting because of the controversy with the Tolkien Society. And then I just didn't have time to get my act together for doing both topics in one episode. And I just don't want to shortchange all the amazing correspondence and feedback that we've received from that episode. So hopefully that will be next week's episode.
Okay.
Will be the follow-up to our Lord of the Rings and Religion episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah, I don't enjoy being shortchanged, so I doubt our listeners do either. So I think that's a win-win for everyone. Just have two different episodes.
Boom.
Yeah, they don't really go together anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be hard to segue, I think.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You're making me feel
better.
Am
I making
you
feel better? Good. Yeah. Okay.
Well, hey, special shout out, as always, to our patrons at the beginning of the episode. A special thanks to our executive producers. Of course, we've had Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien as an executive producer for several episodes now, and we want to give a big shout out to our newest executive producer, Lise Yu.
Awesome.
So, thank you so much.
Thank you both. It's
yes.
Awesome.
And thank you, thank you, Lise, for your generosity in becoming an executive producer of the podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
All of our listeners owe you a debt of gratitude.
Mm.
So
yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. So thank you.
Also want to give a shout out to Adriana P. I believe I'm saying your first name right. So, let me know if I get it wrong and I will make the correction. But thank you for your pledge of support as well, Adriana.
Yes, thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So you too can support us on Patreon if you are not already doing so. Supporting us on Patreon lets us know that you're a super fan, right? Lets you support the show in a tangible way and land you some awesome perks like early access to new episodes and more. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out the deets. You can also give via tip jar. Go over to a particular episode and drop us a donation
Yeah.
using the blue button that says leave a tip. And as always, please do subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, if nothing else, right? So leaving us that 5-star rating and especially leaving a review helps get the word out about us. It tells iTunes to make us a priority. So,
which we should be.
Absolutely.
Because we are. We're
the
awesome.
Number one priority.
Yeah, number one. Always. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can agree
jinx,
on that.
Jinx.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Tolkien news. Well, you know, we got a couple of little video game tidbits. So I think I've mentioned recently on maybe a recent episode or two that on the advice of some of our listeners over the last couple of years, I have started playing the Lord of the Rings online game, and it's fantastic. I really love it. It's so immersive. You feel like they just did an outstanding job creating Middle Earth in a video game way. It's just the kind of thing that I wish I had hours upon hours to play. Right. I try to eke out some time every week just to, you know, sit down for 15 or 20 minutes and just play it. But honestly, it's fun to just go and explore that thing. And so why I bring that up is because there's a couple of news on the Lord of the Rings video game front, a couple of pieces of news. First of all, Lord of the Rings Online is going to get a visual update in accord with what Amazon is up to. Even though it's not the same, it's not made by Amazon or anything like that. The game isn't made by Amazon. It's going to be getting a visual update. And it's actually pretty old. It actually goes back to 2007.
The game does.
The game goes back to 2007,
yeah. I didn't realize that. Okay.
But it's going to get apparently it's going to get a visual update here soon. And it's already, like, that's exciting because it's already pretty amazing visually. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. I haven't played it, but what you've told me, it sounds like it's stunning.
At some point, we need to do a special episode or something like that where we just... maybe we'll do a YouTube, you know, like a live stream or something like that of just playing it with you watching and just being like, oh, go over here. It's fun, honestly, just to go go everywhere. Right.
Yeah. Not necessarily even have a mission.
Right.
Just kind of wander through Middle Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
I can imagine. That would be pretty great.
I spent about an hour one Sunday morning journeying from Bree to Hobbiton.
Right? Oh, so, okay.
And all the way, and you know, it was just, I mean, it was really, the detail was really amazing. And even like peeked into the old forest, right, where Tom Bombadil lives, to see if I could spot old Tom, but I wasn't brave enough to go all the way and find him.
So is that because you could get killed?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then what happens when you get killed? You just can't play anymore?
It'll just like, there's different things that happen, but basically it'll just bring you right back. And then if you get killed again, like very soon, then you have to like wait a certain amount of time, I think. Or it takes you all the way back to like where you started or something like that. But it's like an ongoing game, right?
Oh,
It's really pretty amazing. So Lord of the Rings Online is going to get a visual update. We'll link to that article in the show notes. And then Amazon is also producing its own Lord of the Rings online style game, apparently, to release in 2022. So,
really?
Yeah. So that's, I assume that's going to, you know, really capitalize on, you know, everything going on with the Lord of the Rings, on Prime TV show. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how much overlap there's going to be, or, you know, I mean, I can't imagine that one won't be competition for the other.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be competition. Well, and I think I'm reading this right. Again, I'm not on the pulse of gamer news mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that these are two separate things, right? They're not going, it's not like Amazon bought the game from, Standing Stone
Games.
Right,
but they're both online Middle Earth inspired or Lord of the Rings inspired video games.
Right.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see which one is superior.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay.
All right. As we began last week, on last episode, we have a Tolkien quote of the week this week. We'll just read this briefly and maybe discuss it a little bit. So we picked something out that's particularly interesting from something Tolkien wrote somewhere or something Tolkien said somewhere. This one is from a letter from September of 1954 to Peter Hastings, who was the manager of the Newman Bookshop in Oxford. And it's a long letter. This is a really, there's lots of good stuff in this particular letter. It's actually letter 153 in the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien. But I thought this was really interesting. He talks about reincarnation. So there's this paragraph where he says, where Tolkien says, "Reincarnation may be bad theology, that surely, rather than metaphysics, as applied to humanity. And my legendarium, especially the downfall of Numenor, which lies immediately behind the Lord of the Rings, is based on my view. That men are essentially mortal and must not try to become immortal in the flesh. But I do not see how even in the primary world any theologian or philosopher, unless very much better informed about the relation of spirit and body than I believe anyone to be, could deny the possibility of reincarnation, the possibility of reincarnation as a mode of existence prescribed for certain kinds of rational incarnate creatures." So I found that particularly interesting just because from what I understand in this upcoming Nature of Middle-earth book that's going to be coming out next year, based on writings, you know, leftover writings of Tolkien's, I think one of the topics that's going to be explored is elves and reincarnation, right? So okay. I like that quote because, again, Tolkien as a Catholic would not have believed in reincarnation for men, right?
Right, because the Catholic faith
rejects that idea. And it should be clear that he also in this, he's writing to another Catholic, right? The Numa Bookshop would have been like a particularly Catholic bookstore there in England. But he's having kind of a debate with this guy and saying that just because it doesn't apply to men doesn't mean it couldn't apply to, at least in theory, to some other creature. And this all comes on the heels of some of his discussions of what, you know, what like the role that subcreation plays in God's own creativity, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's actually in the paragraph right before that. And so part of me wanted to discuss that as well, but you know, it just would have been too much for one particular episode since we have other things to talk about. So anyway, I just find that interesting that Tolkien was open to the idea of like reincarnation for beings other than for human beings, right?
Right. I wonder if would that include animals, you think?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know that he necessarily thinks that in the case of like, you know, animals that we think about.
Okay.
I think he's just saying like in theory, there's no reason that God couldn't create a universe in which reincarnation happens. Right, to some creatures, right?
Yes. Yeah.
To certain creatures, right? Okay. It's more of just a theoretical question. And I think this demonstrates the kind of things where people can get tripped up when it comes to Tolkien, especially if, they're coming from sort of a particular like religious background and are very heavy on, you know, the dogma or, kind of the fundamentals of whatever system of belief they have, they can maybe hear this on the surface and be like, Tolkien was okay with reincarnation and be like, well, see, that just proves Tolkien is crazy and, you know, these sorts of things. And he wasn't really Catholic or Christian. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, no, you didn't actually read what he had to say, right? He's making a very fine point, right? But it's a very fascinating point. And that's one of the things that I do appreciate about Tolkien so much. So
yeah,
it's just the expansiveness of his mind, right?
Right, that he would spend that kind of time and put that much thought into such a small point. And I'll say this too,
it's not just the expansiveness of his mind, but it's also the notion that he was very grounded in reality as well, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, lots of people can have expansive minds and just be completely off their rockers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he had that ability to have an expansive mind, but also to be grounded in the things of reality,
yes.
Right? And very much
yes.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like he was just like, well, let's just do whatever we feel like doing, right? Lord of the Rings is realistic, right?
Oh, for sure.
It's just feels real. So anyway,
yeah,
I'm going to get going if I keep going on that
All
topic.
All right, so let's transition. To what we're actually going to talk about on this episode.
I've already forgotten what we're talking about. Oh!
According to your notes, it looks like we're talking about the Project Northmore controversy.
Project Northmore controversy.
Is that what you just remembered?
That is just what I remembered. Project Northmore. All right, Greta, you ready to talk about it?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Jinx.
So, in early December of 2020, a website was launched at projectnorthmore.org. It was accompanied by an extremely well-produced video featuring some very famous actors from Peter Jackson's Middle-earth films, including Sir Ian McKellen, a.k.a. Gandalf, Martin Freeman, a.k.a. Bilbo, John Rhys-Davies, a.k.a. Gimli. You can view the video, that should be and John Rhys Davies, a.k.a. Gimli. You can view the video at projectnorthmore.org. It made a pretty big splash when it was released, not only in Tolkien fan circles, but also in publications such as the New York Times. And I have to say, I watched it, and I understand it's not just that it featured those individuals, also featured Annie Lennox, who, of course, sang Into the West and Return of the King, and some other very notable people. It actually featured our friend Cliff Broadway, right? Quick meme.
Oh.
We had the discussion of the Latron Prime sex scandal.
Yes. So, I didn't know he was in it.
Yes, he's actually is. So you have not watched the video. You need to go watch the video
at
some point. It's an extremely well-produced video. And so I understand why it really made a big splash. We're just going to kind of, before we get into the Tolkien Society's response, we're just going to go through their press release on December 2nd. And there's a lot of information beyond what we'll cover in this episode on the website. So there's FAQs and all these kinds of things. So, you know, do your own due diligence. Go check it out. Go check out Project Northmore. So the project objective, the stated objective of the project is to purchase the house and set up a literary center in honor of Tolkien, one of the most beloved literary writers of the 20th century. So why Project Northmore? What is this house that they refer to? Well, if you listen to our last episode on the life of J.R.R. Tolkien, mm-hmm. you'd know that 22 Northmore Road is the house that Tolkien and his family lived in from 1930 to 1947, which really would have been the years that he wrote both The Hobbit and wrote a good chunk, if not most of, The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So this is a very significant house in terms of the life of Tolkien, mm-hmm. especially for fans of his legendarium.
Yes.
So, yeah. He would have written Leif by Niggle while he was there. He would have composed On Fairy Stories. He probably wrote Mythopoeia while he was there. You know, I mean, just a lot of the things that are like the big works.
That's hallowed ground.
Exactly. I mean, really
yeah.
is.
No,
it really
I'm serious.
Is.
It's hallowed ground. Yeah.
So, a little bit about the house. It's they call it a period house, which is an hour's drive from London, and it's largely unchanged since it was built in 1924. It features six large bedrooms upstairs, one bedroom on the ground floor, and a spacious garden. The Tolkien family moved there in 1930 and stayed there for 17 years, during which times J.R.R. Tolkien wrote The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and where he had also hosted C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. So C.S. Lewis would have spent time there, you know, as well, amongst probably some of the other Inklings.
Right. Okay.
So
this is an hour's drive from London,
yeah.
which puts it where in England?
It's in Oxford.
It's in
so
Oxford,
it's,
okay.
It's, or it's near Oxford. It's at least near Oxford. I think the address is actually Oxford.
Okay.
But I believe that's, did they say, it says an hour. I think it's definitely north. I think it's north.
I have no sense of direction. Yeah. It makes no difference to me. I was just wondering what town it was in.
Yeah.
And you answered that question. So
it's northish.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So. Definitely not selfish.
Well, it can't be because it's Northmore Road. You can't have North.
I don't think that has anything to
Moore
do with
Road in the South. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
It's just that would be completely unthinkable.
It would be totally unthinkable. It's something I would do.
Look at those deductive skills. Just amazing.
Yes.
Oh.
The sarcasm.
Yes. It's good. I like
heavy.
That. I like
yeah.
that.
Okay.
All right. So what they're trying to do, what Project Northmore is trying to do, is to buy this house using crowdfunding to include Tolkien fans from around the world. The funding target is $6 million US dollars, which is about 4.5 million pounds, of which 5.3 million US dollars is to pay for the house. The remainder will go to the necessary renovations to comply with building regulations, startup costs of the charity, with additional funds going towards developing the literary programs. The operation will be financially self-sustaining once established.
I'm wondering how hot the real estate market is in Oxford right now, because it's going to take a little while to raise that kind of money. And I'm curious about the chances that some millionaire is just going to come along in the meantime and be like, I want it. I'm buying it. Goodbye.
Well, that's absolutely a possibility. And we'll get into that, because I think it kind of feeds into the controversy here.
Okay.
So if we haven't really gotten into the controversy yet, it sounds pretty straightforward, right? It's kind of like, okay, they have this idea to use a house that's very significant from the life of J.R.R. Tolkien to establish some kind of Tolkien center.
It
right?
seems like a great idea.
It does. On the surface, it
I
seems
mean, I feel
like
it should be preserved in some sense.
It seems like a great idea
yes.
on the surface,
yes.
For sure. So, but at the same time, you know, they're asking a lot of money. You know, it's appropriate to do you know, for people who are fans of Tolkien to do their due diligence and looking into this and saying, you know, is this a scam or is it legit? Mm-hmm. Right. That's a fair thing to ask, especially when you're talking about, you know, trying to raise $6 million.
It hadn't even occurred to me that it might be a scam.
Yeah. Well, always good things to think about.
You're right.
Whenever anybody's asking you to get money, you should want to know if it's a scam,
definitely do
right?
your due diligence, yeah.
The stated mission of Project Northmoor is, they say, as a charitable venture, the mission of Project Northmoor is to promote Tolkien's work, allow a diverse range of fantasy writers and artists to come together to write, learn, and create, and preserve the fascinating house for future generations to enjoy. The facility would also have an engaging online presence to bring into the house's program those who cannot travel to Oxford. Unbelievably, considering his importance, there is no center devoted to Tolkien anywhere in the world, said John Rhys-Davies, the actor who played both Gimli and Treebeard in Peter Jackson's The Lord of the Rings. The vision is to make Tolkien's house into a literary hub that will inspire new generations of writers, artists, and filmmakers for many years to come. And then the project is spearheaded by Julia Golding, a British novelist best known for her Cat Royal series and The Companions Quartet. So, and we'll link to her Wikipedia page if you'd like to. I feel like I've heard her name, but I don't know. I've never read anything by her as far as I know, but she's a very prolific writer. So she's the one really spearheading this, you know, this project. But in the video, like I said, there's some very well-known individuals that, you know, definitely gave this a boost, right? Yeah. Gave this project a boost. So, you know, on the surface, like we were saying, this sounds really cool, right? It's like, you know, they want to develop something that's kind of almost like a shrine for Tolkien in a way. Like, it's like, you know, he lived here, I don't know, aura or something like that. Probably, you know, maybe he still inhabits the house. You know, it's like, you go there, and we've all been to places like that where you go to somewhere that's got some great historical significance and you can maybe just kind of feel it in the air. Right. Now, depending on your view of reality, you may just attribute that to, you know, your own mind, or you may actually think like there's something there, right? There's a resonance there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, on the surface, as Tolkien fans, like, I have a hard time thinking that anybody would think, oh, this sounds really cool, at least.
Right.
Know,
yeah.
First glance.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was released. That statement was released on December 2nd. And then, I had a few people, you know, kind of write to me after we mentioned it on last week's episode and just basically say, hey, you know, like, you might want to slow down a little bit on the optimism on this thing, because it might not be, you know, there needs to be maybe some more investigation into the background of what this is all about, especially with the amount of money they're asking.
Okay.
Which makes me glad that we didn't spend too much time being like, go donate to this last week, because,
right.
You know, it turns out that, you know, there are some, I think, legitimate concerns with it. So the Tolkien Society on December 8th published a response on its website to Project Northmoor. For those of you who don't know, the Tolkien Society is more or less an organization like devoted to education and like kind of the academic development of Tolkien. And it's actually, it goes back a long way. It has its vice president, actually Priscilla Tolkien, who of course is the daughter of Tolkien.
Yeah.
So it's got it has a legitimate connection. You know, I don't know if it would be called an official connection to the Tolkien family and the Tolkien estate, but pretty much as close as you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, for an organization like this, and it tends to be an organization that people look to, you know, to kind of get a good feel for, like, is this just something that's trying to grift off of Tolkien and the Tolkien name, or is this something that, like, it's going to truly honor the legacy of Tolkien, right?
Was Christopher Tolkien a part of this before he passed?
I don't know if he was a member or not, if anybody knows of that, but I think he generally looked at the Tolkien Society in a favorable light.
Okay.
Right?
That's fair.
It feels like Priscilla probably wouldn't have had her name associated with it if
Christopher wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, wasn't on board. Yeah. That's
so,
probably true.
And they do, you know, they are, I believe, a charitable, they're a registered charity in England and Wales. So I think, I think that very fact tells me that, being something official with, you know, with the government of England and Wales, you know, if they were to throw Priscilla Tolkien's name on there and then say president and perpetuo of J.R.R. Tolkien, right, which is what's also on their website, then they would, you know, they would probably get in trouble if they did that, right? If it's being an official registered, you know, charity, right?
Absolutely.
So all that is to say, like, I've always just understood the Tolkien Society to be a very, like, legitimate, you know, voice in speaking about matters of, you know, concerning Tolkien.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
So here's, we'll link to this statement, but here is the statement that the Tolkien Society published on their website on 8 December 2020. The trustees of the Tolkien Society wish to make it clear to society members, supporters, and the public that it is not involved in or affiliated with Project Northmoor. So kind of right out of the gate, you know, pretty like boom, right?
Yeah, they're separating themselves.
They're being very clear. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't, you know, that they're trying to say that this is bad and you shouldn't pay any attention to it. But that does, you know, that does set a tone right out of the gate, right?
It does, yeah.
You know, we've got some issues, some grievances maybe we want to air with Project Northmoor. It goes on to say, Project Northmoor is a separate company that seeks to purchase Tolkien's house. About 3 weeks ago, they approached our chair, Sean Gunner, asking him to take part in a promotional video for their campaign. Sean asked Project Northmoor for more information about the project and subsequently shared that with all trustees of the society. So, you know, to be fair, Project Northmoor did ask the Tolkien Society to kind of bless this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not happen. So for, you know, for whatever reason that, that did not happen. There's a paragraph in here that speaks to what the Tolkien Society is. I won't read that, but you know, that'll give you a better understanding of what the Tolkien Society exists to do. It is a 51 year old charity registered under the law in England and Wales. As a leading Tolkien organization, the trustees considered whether Project Northmoor would help achieve the society's objective to educate the public in and promote research into the life and works of J.R.R. Tolkien. The trustees unanimously concluded that it did not.
Wow. So, unanimously.
Yeah, unanimously concluded that it did not.
Hmm.
Again, what were they looking at? What was the Tolkien Society looking at? Whether this Project Northmoor would help achieve the society's objective to educate the public in and promote research into the life and works of J.R.R. Tolkien. So education and research, right? Into the life and works of J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yep.
So they came out of it. That's their mission. That's, you know, that's where they landed unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
Just to enumerate some of their, you know, some of their concerns. They list these here. The trustees' specific concerns include that, number one, Project Northmoor's two-page plan lacked sufficient detail. So they just didn't think it had enough detail. At least the plan didn't have enough detail.
And that their plan was only 2 pages long.
Right.
Which is fair, because we're talking about Tolkien here.
Yeah.
So they're all, I'm sure, detail-oriented.
Yeah.
And they were like, there's no way 2 pages is sufficient enough.
We expect a 20-page intro.
Yes.
Mythologically told.
Yes.
And then several pages that are going to be in full poetic verse, and then you can tell us about the details.
Part of it of your probably proposal should have been written in Elvish,
right?
And there need to be a good amount of details about the surrounding landscape of the home.
We also need a garden. We also need a long form appendix on the injustices of Peter Jackson excluding Tom Bombadil from Lord of the Rings. So,
oh man, I just really think it's funny that they said 2 page, like they actually were like 2 pages.
I was trying to keep this totally just the facts, y'all.
Sorry,
and then Greta had to get all sarcastic on
I just think that's funny, like I'll be honest, like when you're talking about buying a historical home, I think the plan probably needs to be more than 2 pages. I will agree with that, but yeah. I just think it's funny, like it's just kind of like it's a little extra dig on the Tolkien Society's part. Like 2 pages. Your plan was only 2 pages.
Well,
come on now.
Well, that is a good point. And, you know, especially if you're asking other people and other organizations with reputations at stake to sign off on this, you probably want to do a better job of explaining what you have planned.
Yes.
So I totally understand where they're coming from. Including the 2 pages in there is just to kind of give it a little emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they just said Project Northmore's plan lacks sufficient detail, that's just kind of like, okay, but saying 2-page plan is actually really good rhetoric because it's like, okay, this is only two pages. Yeah. They're asking
like
for
my grocery list is often longer than 2 pages.
They're asking for $6 million. Right. And
Yeah.
My show notes are longer than 2 pages. Where's my $6 million?
Right.
All right. So their second point is no prominent members of the Tolkien community, be they writers, academics, artists, etc., are directors of the company or are named as running the project. So, you know, I get that. You know, I do think that they include, I believe that Alan Lee, John Howe. John Howe, who is one of the, he's one of the like best known illustrators of Tolkien's works. Alan Lee would actually be, I think would he be, may count in that whole thing. I don't know. But anyway, you know, John Howe to me is a big name and somebody who's been doing stuff with Tolkien for a long time. But I don't know. This one, I can see maybe some people being a little bit
offended
by that statement. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That's kind of ballsy. You know,
no prominent members of
Tolkien. That feels like it's a little bit of a shot
just
across the bow.
Because you starred in Lord of the Rings movies doesn't make you a prominent Tolkien member, a prominent member of the Tolkien community. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a little offensive.
Yeah, I think there's some snark in that.
There's definitely some snark.
I understand, again, as the as a Tolkien nerd, I understand like the, I sometimes maybe get a little annoyed with the way that the broader popular culture associates the actors from the films as being like the kings of Tolkiendom instead of like people who are like Tom Shippey and others like that who are like have divested their, you know, invested their lives into exploring and unpacking Tolkien's life and works. So I get that. I get their, you know, that maybe there's a little annoyance with, you know, we'll get these famous people on here and that'll convince people to give to us.
Yeah, I can see that too. But I also, I think they're also clearly kind of drawing a line between accomplished academics and just plain old Tolkien fans.
Yeah.
And as someone that, you know, as someone who's part of a Tolkien podcast, I'm mildly offended by that. What does it take to become a prominent member of the Tolkien community? That's kind of what I want to know.
Yeah. I will say I understand where the Tolkien Society is coming from in saying this, and I think they're distinguishing as directors of the company. And I actually don't know other than Julia Golding who the directors of the company are.
Yeah. Okay.
So that may be the distinguishing mark. It may just be, I don't know, maybe a couple of business people for all I know who like, are like, Tolkien, isn't he that guy that wrote about hobbits? You know,
right.
Yeah, we'll help run this thing.
Right. Yes.
So, you know, there may be some of that in there, but yeah, there's maybe a little snarkiness and snootiness in that. You know, feels a little snarky and snooty.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I think it's the word prominent that I think is getting to me.
Yes. Prominent.
So let's move on.
This would not be a museum and would not be, we're just defending everybody. This is great. I love it.
We're just playing devil's advocate, people. That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
Yes.
This would not be a museum and would not be open to the public. That is true. It would not be a museum. But so I think the idea behind this is that it is open to all comers, but not open to the public in a sense of like free access, right? Because and the reason I understand it is it's in a residential, it's not zoned to be able to be anything like museum or something like that.
So
right?
You couldn't just go and like take a tour.
No.
Of the house.
No.
Okay.
Not as I understand it.
Okay.
There are certain things that you couldn't do. I mean, if I looked on Google Maps at this house, and it's not big. It's not a mansion.
But it has 6-7 bedrooms.
I'm not saying it's tiny, but it's not a mansion,
okay.
Right? It's not like some palatial, it's not Downton Abbey, right?
Okay. Well, you know? Yes. I didn't picture it as Downton Abbey, but.
This is probably in the grand scheme of Oxford these days, for all I know, it might be fairly modest, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, it's not a big place and it's not zoned to be a museum. So that's true. Project Northmore's primary intention appears to be to run creative workshops rather than educational programs about Tolkien. So again, the Tolkien Society wants education, wants research, and not necessarily a place for people to go and kind of do their creative
workshops.
Just
go like drink their coffee and write. Yeah.
they don't want a glorified Starbucks.
I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
I can. Mm-hmm. I think it would be wrong to use it in that way. And to also, I mean, not wrong necessarily, but it seems like it would definitely be, it wouldn't be accomplishing the mission that is so important to the Tolkien Society, or that we can only imagine would have been important to Tolkien himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I kind of pictured this as like someplace like, you know, like the Carter House that we have here in Franklin, Tennessee.
Which Carton.
There's a Carter House too.
Okay.
I've been to Carton. Okay, Carton. That's fine, because I actually have been to Carton.
Sorry.
That's okay. You can go.
I just tried to Frank explain to you.
You did. Franklin. Oh, you did try to Frank explain.
Yeah.
So I guess I got kind of how I pictured it. You know, Carton, which was nobody like super famous lived there, but it was, you know, it's a nice like southern plantation mansion, and it was turned into a hospital during the Civil War, and there's lots of history there. I guess that's kind of how I pictured it. Like, you can go pay a fee and get like a guide who's very knowledgeable of history and things like that to show you around the house. Mm-hmm. But that's not how this would be.
No.
So you kind of already have to be smart to get in here. You have to be a creative, decent writer.
Well, I think there's more to it than that. I think it's just not focused on like being primarily about education and research, right? It's, I think anybody can like go there and, but you know, it's not as like, this is not going to be a Tolkien museum.
Okay.
Even like at a museum, you know, you could see there being like meeting rooms or something like that where people are able to use, but like rent specific facilities to use for like creative workshops and that kind of thing.
Right.
But this is not going to be a place like that. And again, we'll, after we get through the Tolkien Society's notes, we're going to read a little bit more about what Project Northwar had to say in response to this, right?
Okay, cool.
Project Northmore's plan includes spiritual retreats, which falls outside the scope of the society's objective. So we'll get into that a little bit with the response from Project Northmore, because I detect a little bit of just some kind of anti-religious attitude there. And so that's why I say there's some tangential.
Oh, okay.
There's like not necessarily just in that statement alone, but I don't know. They're it's like, well, what's wrong with having that as part of it? You know, if a group wants to pay to use a facility that's at a museum for some religious purpose, right? You know, like, shouldn't that be a possibility?
Yeah, I guess my initial response was like, if you're going to do a spiritual retreat, you need to be at a church, or you need to be at a monastery, or you need to be at a convent, or some other kind of space that's dedicated to like religious efforts. That was my, like, I don't really have a problem with that. I kind of, you know, I didn't think about the Tolkien Society being maybe not super concerned about religion, but my thought was I wouldn't want to go to a spiritual retreat in a house.
Well, that's your preference.
That's my preference.
But I'm just saying, like, if it was a public, here's the thing, like, and I will admit that my own bias seeps into that, like, into my reaction to this statement, but, we've been on this subject, you know, recently. So, you know, I take strong exception when people come in and they're like, we're not going to include any of this, you know, any of the religion stuff in Tolkien, you know, in Tolkien's discussion of Tolkien's works or something like that. And I'm just like, okay, A, then you're missing out on a huge part of who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
And what inspired him to write in the first place.
Yeah.
And B, like, why B, why the kind of attitude? Why the snobbery?
Mm-hmm,
you know. So I'm open to what people might have to, you know, might have to say about that. I just look at it and say, if it's a public facility, and it's not going to be a public facility, but if it was a public facility, museum, whatever it is, places like that have spots that can be rented out for, you know, for purposes of anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you pay whatever you want to pay, you can rent that facility out for a specific purpose. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, but they're specifically picking out Yeah, the spiritual retreat aspect.
So anyway, moving on. Their business model includes running a bed and breakfast with a full-time resident warden. Yeah, okay. I mean, got it. I don't have a strong reaction one way or the other, but, you know, again, they want to use it to, it sounds like they want to use it to be a, you know, they're a nonprofit organization, but they want to, make money. And again, I know nonprofits do actually make money, right? Mm-hmm. But, anyway, I don't have a strong reaction to that one.
My initial thought on that is I feel like they need to figure out what their focus is.
Yeah.
They're kind of all over the place, it sounds like.
You're right. The property itself is a listed building in a conservation area with a blue plaque plaque proudly showing its connection to Tolkien, meaning the property is well protected under the law and not in need of rescue. So it's actually not in need. Like it's in some kind of a conservation area, meaning it's a historic place, you know, or it's a historic neighborhood where if you do make any kind of like, if you were going to like tear the house down, I don't think you're allowed to tear the house down, right? Or do some kind of like drastic renovation to it.
Right. Yeah. So, you got to kind of abide by certain regulations. But I'm wondering, like, but it is, when they say a listed building,
mm-hmm.
does that mean it's like on some kind of registry, or does that mean it actually is listed for sale?
It says, no, it means it's on a registry, right? So, okay. It's heritage category. If you go to historicengland.org.uk, 20 Northmore Road is listed as a heritage category listed building, grade 2.
Okay.
So this is, it's got a little entry about the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it says it's listed for its historic importance as the home and workplace of Professor J.R.R. Tolkien from 1930 to 1947. They misspelled Tolkien's last name. Tolkien.
Ew.
Come on, people. You're the historicengland.org.uk.
So because it's on a registry,
mm-hmm.
it is being taken care of.
Yeah.
The inside and the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, surely did
people... I don't know how well it's being taken care of. They're not allowed to... A person couldn't just come in and buy it and be like, I'll do whatever I want to this house, right? Like,
right,
they would have,
okay.
There's some kind of...
But you
protections.
Can, you can buy it.
Yes.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And like, I think, you know, that house. I grew up in a place called Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And just down the road from where I grew up is the historic home of Zachary Taylor.
That's
was a president, mm-hmm. you know, of the United States in the 19th century.
Right.
And then there's like a big cemetery where he's buried and everything really close to it. But I believe that people live in the house, even though it's a historic home, like people live in that house and it's
there.
In the middle of a neighborhood. Right?
Well, there's plenty of those kind of homes here in Franklin,
yeah.
in downtown Franklin that people live in, and there's mm-hmm. still the plaques outside and everything.
Yeah. The church, the old church at our parish is a historic building like this. Like they can't,
right.
like they're not allowed to go and change because
mm-hmm.
it's the oldest church in this county. It's the oldest mm-hmm. Catholic church in this county.
Yeah.
So they're not allowed to like go and, you know, make like they have to get very, if they want to do any kind of work on it, they have to get permission mm-hmm. from the city council.
Right. Because there's very strict regulations. Yeah, I get that. I don't know that it's necessarily Project Northmore's goal to rescue the property. I don't think they,
well, they say that in the call to arms. That's the thing,
oh, they
right?
Do? They do.
They say the stated objective of the project is to purchase the house and set up a literary, where is it?
I'll trust you. I don't remember hearing the word rescue in the, is it in the mission part?
I know I had it in here somewhere. Let's see.
Well, anyway, it's fine.
Here we go. On the press release, at the very top of the press release, from December 2nd on the Project Northmore website, it says Sir Ian McKellen, Annie Lennox, Martin Freeman, John Rhys-Davies, Sir Derek Jacobi and others joined with author Julia Golding for crowdfunding effort to try and save J.R.R. Tolkien's famed house.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So it's like, it's the call to arms, you know, it's like save J.R.R. Tolkien's house, right? Save the Hobbit house, right?
It's like they're trying to like tear it down. It's like, you know, people tying themselves to trees or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, To prevent them from being cut down.
Yeah.
I guess that's maybe the imagery that they're trying to...
Just using that language of saving the house, it's like, well, what are we saving it from, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the emotional appeal to get people to donate to this thing.
It is an emotional appeal. Yeah, I think I give the Tolkien Society a point on that one.
We're giving points. Point, Tolkien Society. We should have done that from the beginning.
We should have.
They get like an extra point for the two-page plan. Point for the point, and then point for the two-page plan.
I think I give Tolkien Society a point, and then I think I take it away for their too much attention to detail or something.
Yeah, right. Well,
the snootiness.
The snootiness. All right. The relationship between the U.S. and U.K. organizations appeared unclear. That was another bullet point from the Tolkien mm-hmm. Society. So mm-hmm. Take that as it will.
And we are basically declared enemies. So
yes,
I mean,
ever since
World War II.
Ever since those darn redcoats.
That's right. It goes further back than World War II.
The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, right?
That's right. Some people just can't let bygones be bygones. Jeez.
I'm just...
All right, moving on.
Let's just pretend like that didn't happen. All right. And then as a new organization, Project Northmoor, having only existed for a month. Sorry. That was good.
Okay.
That's good. I'm proud of you for that one.
Thanks.
As a new organization, Project Northmoor, having only existed for a month, it is difficult to assess their ability, capability, and capacity to deliver the project successfully. So...
Okay.
Yeah, and it ends by saying the trustees wanted to provide this transparency of their conversation for the benefit of the Tolkien community. The trustees, as is their legal duty under the law in England and Wales, were considering the best interests of the charity and whether it achieved the charity's objective. For the above reasons, they felt it did not.
That's really nice that they did that, mm-hmm. even though we're not prominent members of the Tolkien community. It's nice that they let us have a little look-see into their concerns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't send this directly to us. It's on their website.
It is on their website. Yeah.
Well, I think it matters that, you know, they want to explain like why they didn't sign on to
it. Why they just jump on board. Right? Yeah. And I think that's good. I think that's good that they, you know, that they are being transparent with how they came to the decision they came to.
Yeah. I just thought it sounded like you were saying like it was nice that the Tolkien Society personally sent us a note saying why they made this decision.
Well, I think it's nice that they recognize that we are all part of the Tolkien community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's the Tolkien Society's response. That's mm-hmm. their reasons for rejecting the invitation to be a part of Project Northmoor, to sign on to Project Northmoor and to endorse Project Northmoor. They have decided not to for those mm-hmm. reasons. So, you know, I can definitely see why, you know, at the very least, I can see why they make the argument that it's outside the scope of what they want to, you know, what their organization exists
to
accomplish.
Organization. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And they're not coming right out and saying this is a terrible idea. They're just explaining why they chose not to get on board. But I feel like the kind of overarching theme of these concerns that they laid out is, well, not maybe totally overarching, but a good many of them, I think, can be tied, like they can't get on board with the mission.
Yeah.
And part of that might just be that Project Northmoor needs to button up their plan, you know?
Yeah.
And figure out what exactly it is that they want to do.
I think there are absolutely a good number of legitimate criticisms here mm-hmm. and probably some others that we could enumerate that aren't listed.
Yes.
So I was able to find, some information about how Project Northmoor responded to the Tolkien Society. So this is from theguardian.com, which I believe is a UK publication. This is questions raised over charity seeking to buy J.R.R. Tolkien's Oxford House. So let's hit some of the high notes of this article. First of all, here's the thing. This article, I don't know much about The Guardian, but I really detected an even stronger, like anti-religious bias in this article.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's normal for the guardian.com or whatever. But this is the best article I could find that contained info about Project Northmore's response. And so that's why I'm reading it.
So they didn't have like so Project Northmore did not provide like
they didn't do like a
direct
press
response and oh, okay. In right. The same
they didn't
form
do like
that,
a press release or anything like that. I mean, okay. I'm going to go check here again and on their website under news. Let's see. Yeah. So yeah, there's no like press release in response to this on Project Northmore's website.
Okay.
So, but they do, the Guardian was able to get a few statements from Julia Golding in regard to what the Tolkien Society had to say.
Okay.
So let's look at some of this. First of all, there's this. Project Northmore's Charity Commission entry states that one of its objectives is to advance the public knowledge and appreciation of the life, faith, and works of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Inklings. Project Northmore's founder, author Julia Golding, writes from a faith-based perspective. Its three trustees are all active or retired directors of Christian organizations. The PR firm representing the project is a longtime leader in the promotion of faith-based campaigns. The fundraising platforms it chose to launch the project with are both Christian platforms, Stewardship in the UK and The Signatory in the US. The Signatory describes its mission as to inspire and facilitate revolutionary biblical generosity. So The Guardian, I guess what they further uncovered in their research is that the organizations that are being used for like to basically receive the donations are specifically religious faith-based like organizations. So I don't get why that's really a big deal.
I was wondering that as you were reading it.
Other than you just don't like religion.
Right.
And look, if you have another reason, then tell us. But if it's just anti-religion snootiness,
mm-hmm. That doesn't really have a place.
Then bugger off. Right. Seriously. Guess who else was religious? J.R.R. Tolkien.
Right. Yep.
I'm sorry.
Maybe I was wrong.
I'm annoyed by the tone.
Maybe it's the correspondence on religion and this one actually would have gone well together. It sounds like maybe it would have. But I don't understand either how that's a response, though.
Well, that's not the whole thing. Let's go on.
Okay.
And this contains a little bit more of like what Project Northmore's actual response was. And again, this is all from a Guardian article about this. So I'm trying to pull out what Project Northmore actually said, and I'm having to sift through a lot of mm-hmm. what feels like some person who just doesn't like either religion or Christianity or Roman Catholicism specifically.
Or all of the above. Yes.
No reference to Tolkien's Roman Catholic faith was made on Project Northmore's website until 4 December, when it updated its FAQs to state that it is not a religious organization and hopes to welcome people of all faiths and as well as those of none to appreciate Tolkien's legacy. Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tolkien himself was a committed Roman Catholic and member of the Inklings, a group which included C.S. Lewis, so some people will be drawn to Oxford to find out more about that, which is great, but it is not the only way to enjoy Tolkien. Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Our program will reflect the breadth of his interests, says the charity.
Hmm. Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I don't understand what's wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't either.
All right, and then it goes on a little later. Golding told The Guardian that the reason for choosing two Christian platforms was that we had to move at speed, and the Signatory and Stewardship were both able to help set up tax-efficient giving within a couple of days, whereas other platforms said they would take weeks. Our understanding is that the Signatory and Stewardship are giving platforms developed by the faith community, but not exclusively for the faith-based groups. The Signatory, for example, lists its areas of involvement as community development, education, and religion. She added, "We fit within education, and we are not a charity for the advancement of religion."
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm having a hard time detecting, anything wrong with Golding's responses here or with, you know, feeling like The Guardian's kind of tone towards all of this is anyway justified.
Right. Exactly. And it sounds like they're really just responding to that one concern of the Tolkien Society, which
exactly.
was about the spiritual retreats.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. There are other concerns besides
that.
It's like
they're kind of, I shouldn't mind read, but I'm telling you how I feel when I hear this. All right. I feel like whoever wrote this article or the editors that put it together or whatever are basically over there like, they better not include anything about Tolkien's Roman Catholic faith. Like,
it kind of sounds that way.
You know?
Yeah, it really does. Like, you know, I mean, maybe they're just trying to be, you know, they think it needs to be more politically correct or something, but I don't know. I'm just a little annoyed that that's what they're focusing on, because I feel like the Tolkien Society had other legitimate concerns.
Right.
But they're just picking out this one little thing about maybe wanting to do a spiritual retreat here and there, and that's what they're giving all the lip service to.
Exactly. You're right.
Oh.
Well, it does go on towards the end of the article to talk about another very legitimate concern, which is, what if Northmore can't purchase the house? Right? So the
Tolkien Society never mentioned that as a concern. So, they just said it didn't need to be rescued.
Well, I got it. So, but there is a legitimate concern of people who say, like, well, what if I give and then, you know, it doesn't succeed. What's going to happen to my money? Right.
That's legitimate. Yeah, but that, I don't think that was a concern raised by the Tolkien Society.
You're right. Tolkien Society did not actually mention that.
They're not giving any money. So what do they care?
You were on. You're just like, you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
I'm serious, you know?
Well, thank you.
You're asking really good questions, holding both sides accountable. It's good. So Golding said the three objectives of Project Northmore were to preserve 20 Northmore Road, Oxford, as the former home of J.R.R. Tolkien and where The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings were written, to advance the public knowledge and appreciation of the life, faith, and works of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Inklings, to advance education in the arts and crafts, including the arts of literature and language. We understand most people are giving in the hopes of securing the first objective, but this property was offered to us for sale by the current owner, and we can't guarantee that he won't sell it to someone else, she said. The Charity Commission have said that whether or not the house is secured for posterity, the charity can pursue its other educational and literary aims. So basically what that says to me is that even if you give the money, like, and there's, you can go and look on the FAQs. I think there are cases in which, I think if it's made through PayPal, they can pretty easily refund it. If it's made through other organizations, it's maybe not as clear whether they can. Visit the FAQs if you're interested in giving, and you'll learn more about that. Always know if you can get your money back before you give to something like this, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But if they can't purchase the house, which is a very real possibility, because they don't have any legal standing to ensure that the person who currently owns the house has to sell it to them, mm-hmm. right? Even if, you know, even within a certain time period. I think they may have been told that if they can get it by a certain date, then he'll hold it for them.
Okay.
But that's not even a legal, I don't even think it's a legal standing. It's more of just kind of like a handshake agreement,
yeah,
okay. You know?
Yeah.
All that.
But this is also saying that they could possibly use your money for something else.
Well, yeah. And so it would be for those other aims, right?
Yeah. Okay.
To advance education in the arts and crafts, including the arts of literature and language. And that's the third one. But the second one was to advance the public knowledge and appreciation of the life, faith, and works of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Inklings. Okay. So maybe they would set up they buy another house somewhere and set that up, right?
That. Okay.
Or buy some, you know, make some kind of like Tolkien focused retreat center, creative retreat center or something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, I mean,
I'm kind of wondering who the current owner is and who the, like, why it was offered to them in the first place.
Why it was offered to Project Northmore?
Yeah. Or, I mean,
I don't know.
I'm wondering what came first. Did Project Northmore arise because of, like, did it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did it come into existence because they were offered the sale of this home, or were they offered the sale of this home and while they were already a thing? How long has so the Tolkien Society said Project Northmore has only been around for a month.
Right.
So that basically means that maybe they didn't exist before they were offered the home for sale? Or did they? I'm just asking why they were even offered the sale of the home. But
yeah, I don't know.
I'm just thinking out. Yeah. I'm just wondering.
I just don't
out
know.
Loud. Yeah, I'm just wondering out loud.
There's a lot of information. There's the FAQs are on the page. You know, are on
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be answers to those questions if you dig a little deeper. You know, even just from the information that's already on the website.
Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine owning this house and wanting to sell it. I just can't even imagine that.
Well,
I'm obviously not the owner, so
yeah.
If you need the money, I guess.
Why would you sell any house? Because, you know, you've got your any piece of property. I mean,
I know, but this is like Tolkien house. You know,
not everybody has. Not everybody has.
Famous person lived in this house.
Not everybody has the emotional ties to Tolkien that we
that
do.
That is true.
So
that is true.
You know, I can't imagine if it was my house that I'd ever want to do that. But then again, I'm not the kind of person who has, you know, $6 million to just, you know, throw around. So,
nor am I, which is why I'm doing this podcast with you.
Oh, that's the only reason, huh?
I'm just kidding.
where were we? I mean, I think, I don't know. I appreciate the Tolkien Society's statement and coming out and saying, like, basically, we're not endorsing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely understand why they did. And mm-hmm. I completely think that probably they shouldn't. I think that Project Northmoor needs to, you know, has already tried to and needs to continue to clarify any major concerns that people have if they want this to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I don't see anything wrong with what Project Northmoor is trying to accomplish.
I really don't either. I don't either. And I think they can totally be successful without the Tolkien Society's support.
Yeah.
Plenty of other Tolkien inspired things have been successful without the Tolkien Society's support. So I don't know why this would be any different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it might give a little extra oomph to the fundraising effort.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if Tolkien Society wants to boycott the effort, then that's completely their right. You know, if it's not something that they can get on board with, then...
Let's be clear. Boycott is different from just saying we're not endorsing this.
You're right. That's true.
Right. I can ask them to endorse my podcast and they can say, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as a boycott. A boycott would be like, do not give to this.
That's right? True. No, you make a fair point. You do make a fair point. I got a little riled up there for a minute. But I mean, it definitely would have been helpful for Project Northmoor to have the backing of the Tolkien Society, but I don't think it's a make or break thing.
Yeah, well, and to date, let's see, how much have they raised? Can we find out? Going to projectnorthmoor.org. Let's see. Look at that picture of Tolkien, man.
He looks so young.
Looking all dapper and...
Very dapper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I thought it was on here.
No.
So far, they have raised, looks like a little over 600,000 U.S. dollars. So 11.7% is where they're at.
Okay.
So.
Is there a time limit on this thing? Like, are they only going to be fundraising for a certain amount of time? Do you know?
I would imagine so. But I'm not 100% sure.
But that hasn't been advertised.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. So there you go. That's Project Northmoor. I mean, I'd love to hear from other people what they think about this.
I was just having the exact same thought. I would love to know what our listeners think about all this.
If we've got any blind spots, you know, that we're not seeing, or, you know, if there's some other dastardly intent, you know, then, you know, I'm willing to hear it out. But at the end of the day, I don't know if I'm going to give any money to Project Northmoor, but, I don't have a problem with it as it exists, like a major issue that I can see.
Neither do I.
I'll just say, the tone of some of the, like, you know, like I'm not going to say the Tolkien Society. I'm going to retract any indication I gave that, like, the Tolkien Society was being anti-religious or something like that. I understand that that's not part of the scope of what
they
do.
That's not part of their mission.
Do like this, mm-hmm. you know, especially maybe to do kind of like spiritual readings or, you know, devotional kind of things for,
that's not within the scope of their,
that's not what they do.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm good with that. Right.
Yeah.
But the tone of the Guardian article just makes me want to be like, you know, it just makes me want to be like, oh, I'm giving to this thing.
Right.
I'm giving to this thing just despite the Guardian.
Just to do this,
right.
Like, yeah.
You know, just despite whoever it is that wrote this thing and was like, well, it's all religious and stuff. They're secretly, they're trying to foist their religion upon us. I'm just like,
yeah, well,
that just makes me want to give even more. So, you know, that's why when you're writing articles like this, it's good to be a little more objective and take a step back.
And just kind of not let your own personal,
just dealing facts,
worldview,
and, you know, and try not to put your own kind of spin on it. Anyway,
yeah, I think that's fair.
All right.
Cool.
Any final
that
thoughts?
That was good.
Greta?
Yeah, I think you pretty much, covered it.
All right.
I definitely, after talking about all these things, I feel like if I had to, I feel like I belong more in the Project Northmoor group than mm-hmm. I do in the Tolkien Society group.
Okay.
I feel like that's where, you know.
In terms of just this issue.
In terms of this issue. Yeah. In terms of this issue. And, you know, nothing against the Tolkien Society. I know that they have an important, they serve a very important role.
Yeah.
But I appreciate what Project Northmoor is doing.
Yeah.
I really do.
And to be, I want to be exceedingly fair to the Tolkien Society because I highly value that organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm not a member at this. I've, every year I'm like, oh, I need to become a member, and I just forget to do it.
Well, you're not prominent enough, John.
Come on now. Anybody can become a member.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I really didn't.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll actually do it this year.
Maybe we should.
I highly value that organization. So I want to make it very clear. I don't think the Tolkien Society, I think the Tolkien Society was very careful how it worded this and mm-hmm. was trying to say, like, look, we don't endorse it.
Right.
We want to make it very clear that we don't endorse it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't want there to be any confusion about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not necessarily mean that they want to boycott it or that they're frowning upon anybody else giving their money to it.
Exactly.
They're just saying, like, we don't want somebody to come back and be like, you know, hey, Tolkien Society, great job. This turned out to be mm-hmm. a complete scam, you mm-hmm. know?
Right. There's probably some CYA in there.
Yeah.
And
you and I are members of are members of a board for something. And
right. Yeah.
We understand how this kind of stuff works. You got to be really careful.
You do. Know. You have a reputation to uphold
yeah.
and you have, you know, and you're scrutinized, you know, maybe a little bit more than some other people would be. So I understand why they said what they did, and I applaud them being so transparent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Let's do a little bit of correspondence. So
okay.
we have so much correspondence on the Lord of the Rings religion topic to deal with, and we'll do that when we get to that episode, which hopefully is next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to mention a couple things. First of all, a new comment via iTunes. Very awesome comment here from A.V. Hayes or Av Hayes from December 1st. 5 stars. Your Catholic outlook makes this unique. I love how you guys mix deep Tolkien knowledge with his storytelling and his deep Catholicism. It adds a great new dimension to the Tolkien podcast world that isn't often discussed. Tolkien's music is perhaps the best unintentional exploration of string theory that we have. And it cuts off there. I need to go. I have it somewhere else though. Hold on.
Hmm. You said, it said modern.
Best.
Modern. I'm just saying you left out the word modern.
Here we go. Tolkien's music is perhaps the best unintentional modern explanation of string theory that we may have.
Hmm.
He makes creation understandable on a much deeper and scientific level. Keep up the great work.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I know what string theory is, but I don't know much about it and I can't explain it. But that's really cool to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be awesome at some point to have somebody who's both knowledgeable of string theory and really understands, appreciates Tolkien
mm-hmm.
to come on and talk about that sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's just fascinating to me.
It is.
I, you know, the idea that Tolkien, through like his literary obsessions, you know, kind of, I've always had this sense about Tolkien that he detects things in reality that most other people don't, right? The mm-hmm. the kind of things that underlie reality that most other people don't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Awesome comment.
Yeah,
thank you.
For sure.
Thank you, A.V. Hayes.
Thank you very much.
And we got a couple of emails, 3 emails to take a look at. The first one is from Tim D. This is actually a comment left from episode 219, the first part of the life of J.R.R. Tolkien. He said, thank you very much for this episode. I learned much about Tolkien's biography. He seems to have been very familiar with death from a young age. I appreciated John's deep thoughts towards the end about what the young people who died in wars throughout history could have contributed to humanity if they had lived a full life. It made me think deeply. My interpretation of Leif by Nigel is that Tolkien enters the afterlife, either heaven or the new creation from Christian eschatology, and discovers a perfect version of his life work. This seems to be Tolkien's personal theological pondering rather than something foundational or universal to Christian eschatology. I wonder what sort of answer you can produce on the following based on Tolkien's writings. Did he think that everyone in the new creation will have a perfect version of their life work? Did he think that people who died before they could produce their life works in this creation will contribute something to humanity in the new creation? Boy, those are great questions.
They are really good questions.
I would answer... I would just say with both of them that I would not be surprised if he thought those things, mm-hmm. knowing what I do about him at this point.
Yeah.
I think Tolkien was, for all of his pessimism about the world, I think he was an extremely optimistic person when it came to his Christian hope, right?
Absolutely.
Which a Christian should be, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Utterly optimistic, right, about the long term.
Utterly optimistic, yes. I was gonna say that takes hope to like a whole extreme mm-hmm. level, right? I mean,
you know, it's eyes not seen, ears not heard.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, the glory and the joy, and then the happiness that awaits us. You know, I've often thought lately that, you know, it's every desire, right? Like, it's almost like it has to be fulfilled, right? And not in the sense of like, you know, evil desires or something like that, but even the things that underlie the misguidedness of evil desires, that there is some good underneath there, right? Some hidden good that's being misdirected, right? Even those things, like, we can't even imagine what that will, you know, the happiness and the goodness that will be, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I do think there's something to the idea of like a perfect version of their life work. Yes. And I think you're going to, not only that you're going to see a perfect version of your life work, but you're also going to be able to enjoy the enjoyment of others of those things, right? Or the things mm-hmm. that those contributed to other people, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's one of the key things of Leaf by Niggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Is that connectedness of humanity is going to be more fully realized, right? That we're going to realize like that all of this is meant to show love towards the other, and we'll have that return to us, right? I mean, it's impossible to like explain these things in more than kind of abstract.
Yes, you know, they're very, yes.
Or sort of symbolic ways.
Right. I mean, it's very philosophical in nature, yeah.
Could people who died young like produce this? Sure, you know, like why not? And I will say that there is a, anyway, I don't want to go too far off tangents, but it is a great question. He goes on to say, the exact meaning of the perfect version of one's life work is also open for discussion. Mikhail Kalashnikov, most famous for inventing the AK-47, said many times later, that, by the way, that's kind of a machine gun. It's probably the most, I don't know, produced machine gun in modern warfare. But Mikhail Kalashnikov, most famous for inventing the AK-47, said many times later in life that he would rather have invented the lawnmower or other agricultural machinery. He said that he created the weapon to defend the motherland from Nazi Germany and was sad to see the weapon later be used for offensive purposes, especially by terrorists. Kalashnikov told the Russian Orthodox Church that he experienced spiritual pain over the issue of his potential or partial culpability in the deaths of people killed by AK-47s. It must be sad to regret the accomplishment that you're best known for. I suppose this much is clear. Kalashnikov's engineering skills will be put to a completely different use in a perfect world, right?
Absolutely. Wow.
Yeah, you know, just the biblical imagery of swords being beaten into plowshares, mm-hmm. you know, applies to that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's quite possible that the creation goes on, but in a, you know, our work of creation goes on in some kind of infinite way that's completely unique to us and completely a good, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So that is a great little tidbit about Mikhail Kalashnikov, by the way. That thank really you for sharing is. That, Tim.
Yeah, it's a great email.
A fantastic email. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that. And please keep in touch. All right. I think a couple of shorter notes. Let's see. Grace L. This is going back to way early, I think. So in the podcast, like way back to the early days. She said, John, I'm listening to your and Greta's 2015 podcast on the Silmarillion. Very nice, but I must strongly disagree with you not recommending Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. It is a fantastic story, truly. Listen to Max McLean's audio version. You will get lost in it. I loved it, and I think your listeners will too. At least give them a chance to decide for themselves. First time listener to your podcast. Looking forward to more. Sincerely, Grace L.
That's funny. I don't remember you.
That was a long time ago. I know that I've always, we talk about, it was probably like in the context of talking about allegory, right? And distinguishing like Tolkien's kind of disdain for allegory and saying that like Pilgrim's Progress is the allegory that pops into my mind.
Yes, okay.
When I think of something being allegorical. And I can understand the Tolkien's disdain for allegory. But I, you know, Grace, thank you for your recommendation. And I hope nobody ever takes my feelings about something and decides that that's how they feel about it. You know, everybody should absolutely like explore these things for themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I'll give it another shot. And
I don't think I've ever read it.
Yeah.
I think I've downloaded it on my Kindle.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've read it yet.
Yeah. So I truly appreciate the email and and I would just say absolutely all listeners, you should go and decide for yourselves about this and about anything else that
and if you strongly disagree, let us know.
Yeah absolutely.
And also shout out to a first time listener. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Welcome. And keep listening, please.
Thank you for writing, Grace. It's nice to hear from you.
Absolutely.
And then the final note is from Marilyn the librarian.
Marilyn.
And she simply says, "Bravo, Ettinger."
That was the extent?
That was the email. It was in response. She was writing me another email and then followed it right up and just said, might I say, "Bravo, Ettinger," right?
Bravo, Ettinger.
So,
that's awesome.
You know, and I think she was maybe responding to his note just saying like, you know, I learned something.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know, and just the kind humility, of humility that it expressed. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Marilyn. And I'm sure that Ettinger appreciates that and we appreciate it as well.
Very much.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, through TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Go watch our videos on YouTube and subscribe to that channel over there. And you know, leave comments, leave some thoughts over there on whatever it is you watch and let us know what you think.
Yeah, please.
Special thanks to our patrons, especially the following: Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Lise U,
Shannon S,
Brian O,
Emilio P,
Zeke F,
James A,
James L,
Chris L,
Chuck F,
Azia V,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D,
Eric S,
Joey S,
Eric B,
Matt L,
Johanna T,
Ms. Anonymous,
and Sam N.
Thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.